Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sidcup, where it's 36 degrees with light rain falling. Today is Tuesday, January 31st, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. A new encyclopedia of the Tlingit language has teachers in Sitka scratching their heads. The massive work by New Zealand scholar Sally Ann Lambert is extraordinarily detailed and the product of years of effort. The problem is, the language in the book is not recognizable by contemporary scholars or native Tlingit speakers. In a world as small as that of Tlingit scholarship, the appearance of Sally Ann Lambert's Tlingit Word Encyclopedia, The Origin of Copper, came as quite a surprise. So did the appearance of Sally Ann Lambert, who traveled to Sitka in mid-January to launch the book. No one had heard of her, not the Alaska State Museum, the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, or the very active group of Tlingit language teachers in the Sitka Native Education Program. Nancy Douglas is the Cultural Program Director at the Sitka School District.
For those of us that have been studying Tlingit for 40-plus years and working with elders, I think it was surprising to not have heard of her or her work when we're a pretty tight-knit community when it comes to language learning and pretty open to sharing our points of view with everybody and networking with those of us that are language teachers and language learners. So I guess surprise was what drew me into going to the book launch.
The Tlingit Word Encyclopedia is the second of 9 volumes planned by Lambert. Her first work, A Dictionary of Maori, was published a few years ago. Lambert was born in New Zealand but grew up in Samoa, where she developed an aptitude for language. Lambert turned her attention to Tlingit when she acquired a copy of a book by the late 19th, early 20th century ethnographer J.R. Swanton.
I think often I'm led spiritually, and I don't always make my decisions with the full knowledge of a situation. Basically, the book was given to me and with Tlingit Myths and Texts by John Swanton. And Tlingit language is fortunate to have that resource.
Swanton is indeed a classic early ethnography of Tlingit and a good starting point for the study of Tlingit culture from a Western perspective. The Origin of Copper is one of the stories he recorded, and Lambert uses it as a basis to parse the grammar and culture of the Tlingit. This probably wasn't the best strategy.
So Swanton couldn't hear many of the sounds in Tlingit, so he didn't write it. So she didn't speak them. Swanton didn't put tone marks in his writing, so she doesn't know where the tone marks go.
They never heard of it at that time.
Well, he didn't know how important it was.
This is Ethel Macnan, a retired teacher at the Sitka Native Education Program, or SNEP, and a fluent Tlingit speaker. Ann Johnson, the current lead teacher for SNEP and a fluent Tlingit speaker, and Robbie Littlefield, a non-native who has spent much of her adult life in the active study of Tlingit culture. We're sitting in the SNEP classroom around a copy of Lambert's Tlingit Word Encyclopedia, which comes with an audio CD. Littlefield plays it for Macnan and Johnson, who both learned Tlingit as children. Johnson and Macnan look at each other as the disc plays, shaking their heads. They try to pick out the occasional words, but to these elders who learned Tlingit at the knees of their parents and grandparents, this is gibberish. Macnan says the author of a book on the scale of the Tlingit Word Encyclopedia needs a twofold commitment.
You have to be a speaker of the language and a person who's doing the writing, you know, writing system, has to understand the writing system. Before you can develop a book without knowledgeable people that understand the language.
Johnson remarks on the unconventional orthography in the book's title. Tlingit is commonly spelled in English T-L-I-N-G-I-T. Lambert opts for an H, or H-L-I-N-G-I-T. While this is a small difference, it's also a red flag that Lambert is not following the writing system anywhere in the 630 pages of text. Littlefield can't read it.
On kushayat, digiga, digiga.
In the middle, digiga. How do you say in the middle?
The ego. Is that what she said?
Trying to say that. That's not what she's saying.
Nancy Douglas says Lambert's failure to adopt the accepted writing system makes her work of limited value for modern students.
It was 1976 when Gillian Story and Constant Nash were in, I don't recall if it was Hoon or Angoon, working with the elders there and developed the current orthography that we've been using for 40 and 50 years. So that might be challenging for those of us that have been studying and teaching to grasp on to a new orthography.
So, does that mean the Tlingit Word Encyclopedia is a waste? Lambert, who has no advanced degrees and no university position, admits that she produced the book outside the worlds of Tlingit culture and traditional academia. She says she was pulled to Tlingit by its polarity with the great cultures of South America. Her rationale for the huge investment in time and energy in the book may ultimately have little to do with whether or not it is accepted.
To some degree, I was trying to bring my mother and father back together through my Celtic heritage, because my father had a little French and my mother had a little Scottish. And I felt that they'd lost their culture and they'd lost their reason for being together. And I think that deep in my heart, I was looking for that family togetherness, and I wanted to find that through language. I felt that that was what I could do.
Lambert's Tlingit Word Encyclopedia and her Maori Word Dictionary are both self-published under the imprint WE International, the innovator in indigenous language resources. Her next project will be Celtic to honor her heritage, but she has six other projects planned, including Asian languages. She describes her publishing company as a business operating as a charity. For links to WE International, as well as sources of established Tlingit language scholarship, visit our website, kcaw.org. Should the Alaska Marine Highway buy a used ship from the independent Inter-Island Ferry Authority? Supporters of the idea say it could save money for both operations. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has details.
That's the sound of the ferry Stikine loading a few cars and trucks in Wrangell about 5 years ago. The ship once sailed a summer route from Kaufman Cove on Prince of Wales Island to Wrangell and Petersburg. Those runs were canceled in 2009 because they weren't much used. The Stikine took over Hollis-to-Ketchikan sailings from the older ferry, the Prince of Wales. That left their owner, the Inter-Island Ferry Authority, with an extra ship.
And I'm hoping to convince some of my colleagues to maybe look at buying that and helping the Inter-Island Ferry System out at the same time, so they don't have to carry the expense of maintaining that boat and not using it.
That's State Senator Albert Kukesh, who represents much of Prince of Wales Island, where the ferry authority is based. The Angoon Democrat is interested in using the spare IFA vessel to fill in for the state ferry system's smaller ships.
When the Aurora de Leconte go down or have to go into dry dock for service, they hire Allen Marine, and all they have is catamarans. And there's many, many a times when those things can't make it around Point Retreat, for instance, because of the weather.
Kukesh says buying the ship could be far cheaper than building an Alaska-class ferry, though he supports completing the first in that design. The Inter-Island Ferry Authority says it spends about $300,000 a year storing, maintaining, and providing security for its unused ship. That's about 8% of its annual budget. The IFA is also paying off debt from vessel construction.
You know, we're trying to trim costs and limit the amount of money that we require from the state for annual subsidy.
Bruce Jones is the IFA's general manager. He says the Prince of Wales is only used as a fill-in vessel when its sister ship is being repaired.
So if we can get those two things taken care of, there's a possibility that the IFA can stand on its own, unless, of course, the fuel prices continually to go through the roof.
There's a significant difference between the IFA's vessels and Alaska-class ferries. The yet-to-be-built state ships are expected to cost in the range of $120 million each. The Prince of Wales was built for a sixth of that amount, and a recent survey showed its value as far lower. That's in part because the Prince of Wales is smaller, carrying about a third as many passengers and half as many vehicles. Jones says it also has fewer amenities.
It doesn't have any cabins, you know, for crew quarters, but it could be used as a day boat by the Alaska Marine Highway System, you know, similar to what we use it for.
State Ferry Chief Mike Newsel of Juneau says he hasn't been contacted by lawmakers or the IFA, so he can't comment on a possible purchase. Marine Transportation Advisory Board Chairman Robert Venables of Haines also hasn't been contacted, but if asked, he says he's willing to take a look.
On the surface, there does seem to be some benefits to having a newer vessel in the fleet.
He'd want to know more, such as whether it's compatible with marine highway docks and ramps. But he's most interested in building Alaska-class ferries. They're being designed for the northern and southern ends of Southeast's marine highway system.
Generally, we're seeing an increased need with a number of the mechanical situations and delays from the fleet that really, I think, highlights the need for an improved fleet. And the Alaska-class vessel is going to be one of the most important things we do in the marine highway system and MTAB this year.
IFA officials recently met with several Southeast lawmakers. Senator Kukesh, who chairs his chamber's transportation committee, says he'll pursue the idea. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
July 30th would be designated as Alaska National Guard Day under a measure that passed the House yesterday. House Bill 247, which passed unanimously, now goes to the Senate for consideration. The date marks the anniversary of when the Alaska Guard was authorized in 1948. Bob Lynn, the bill's lead sponsor, says the National Guard honors Alaska, and Alaska should honor the Guard with a special day of recognition. So in weather forecast today, calls for rain diminishing in the afternoon, highs around 41. This is KCAW in Sitka.